Welcome to Red Ice Creations Radio. My name is Henrik Palmgren. I'm the editor and webmaster of redicecreations.com. And this is our internet talk radio show recorded from the west coast of Sweden. And you can join us here every Thursday and Sunday. And today we have with us our monthly regular guest, Michael Tessarion. You can follow along in our program with Michael every third Thursday. And if you are new to the program or new to Michael's material, there are a few websites that you must dive deeper into. MichaelTessarion.com is the main site to look out for, and from there you'll find links to Tarotscopes.com, OriginsAndOracles.com, where you can find Michael's excellent DVD series, Origins and Oracles. And also take a look at the new MTSAR forum set up through redicecreations.com. So lots to look at. Again, that's MichaelTessarion.com. And today's theme is Inquisitions, Old and New. And we are going to dive deeper into the subjects of Christianity, God, religion, and much, much more. So let's get things going here. Welcome back to the program, Michael. Always a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Henrik. It's lovely to be back.
Excellent. You know, to get things going here, I'm going to read a quote from Helen Elbers, The Dark Side of Christian History. The Christian Church has left a legacy, a worldview that permeates every aspect of Western society, both secular and religious. It's a legacy that fosters sexism, racism, the intolerance of difference, and the desecration of the natural environment. Christianity has helped to create a society in which people are alienated not only from each other, but also from the divine. Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. You know, people have to realize that, we're dealing here with a paradigm that is responsible for divorcing man from himself, for creating terrible gender dichotomy, and social, you know, discohesion, and also the is basically perpetrating the idea that the universe, the universal structure, and man's nature is hierarchical as opposed to holarchic. You'll have a lot of people, you know, asking for answers about what we're going to do, you know, to solve all of the different problems that mankind has been facing and is facing now. You have a lot of people with genuine interest. But you see, in order to have a real understanding of how to make positive changes, you have to know what the problem is. You have to know what, you know, the problems are that's facing man right now. And one of them is a philosophical understanding, which even the quantum scientists do understand, is about these two opposing principles. You know, it's like that yin-yang symbol, you see, or the, you know, what the Maya or the Aztecs called the Nahual and the Tonal, or that William Blake referred to as prolific and devouring, you know, the two serpents fighting each other. You know, in life there seem to be two contending worldviews or two contending paradigms, you know, the wave and the pulse. But one of the best ways to really understand this dichotomy is to realize it in the terms that people like Ken Wilber and other very, very sophisticated philosopher scientists are talking about, which is the difference between the hierarchical structure of life with, you know, of course, if we're talking in terms of Christianity, then this makes a lot of sense, because that's exactly what Christianity is. It's God at the top, this bizarre, to me, very bizarre concept of this, you know. I mean, Michelangelo may have painted some nice pictures, you know, showing it, but I mean, it really doesn't make much logical sense if you think about it. About this strong, very masculine force, this sort of father figure at the top of this sort of hierarchy, and then everything, everybody and everything, you know, down from that point. And somewhere at the base of this endless pyramid are the devils and the demons and some sort of infernal, bottomless pit, you know, which all of that's just going to erupt from the bottomless pit. If this God should ever be challenged, you know, my God, should this incredible hierarchy ever be challenged, ever be refuted, ever be questioned, ever be doubted, then you see we have Lucifer, Beelzebub, you see, and the whole infernal army ready to explode and create chaos in the world. So what does the principle, you know, represent at the bottom of the pyramid? Is rebellion. The forces of chaos might erupt. So never question that all-powerful something-something at the top of the pyramid, you don't know what it is, but never question, because we're dealing with a hierarchy here. And this flies in the face of what is known as the holarchy, which science now has proven is, in fact, the way the universe works. It's the way the human mind works, really, but not the ego. The ego consciousness is also hierarchical.
Mm-hmm.
So could it be that man is this God that's at the top of the pyramid, as we've talked in other shows, could this be the fact that this is man projecting his own ego consciousness, a sort of a projection of an imago of his own consciousness, and then he worships that inflated version of his own self? You know, is this what people are doing because they're so traumatized? You know, in my work, I always center anything that's born out of trauma, and I believe that the religious paradigms of the world are born out of trauma. They're, like I said, a hierarchy. A hierarchy. How does a hierarchy come into being? I didn't address it in my work on Atlantis because it was, at that point, writing in that book, it would have been too much of a distraction. But my analysis of what hierarchy is and how it came into being is exactly the same, you know, as how evil came into being.
Yeah.
It all goes back to the time of the original traumatization of the ego and the loss of the umbilical connection to the matrix, which people have described as the mother, you know, the greater knowledge, the higher intelligence, the implicate order.
Yeah.
That got twisted. In most people, it's broken completely. And in other people, it's sort of just choked this connection to the, you know, the matrix, the true intelligence, which is so much more than just what ego consciousness is. Now, that got broken, twisted, traumatized, occluded through this, through these tremendous traumas that happened in historical time. And for people who don't know and are just listening for the first time, you know, very quickly, I consider those to be, first of all, there was a interstellar, in our solar system, there's destruction of this planet, Tiamat, which was witnessed from Earth.
Yeah.
There was a subsequent visitation of alien beings who then subsequently, did some transgenic experiments. And then following that trauma was Earth changes, the famous Earth changes, which, again, science has, science will is also, believe it or not, as we've seen on our websites, we've posted it, science is now even accepting that there has been some interference with the DNA.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But they've certainly already admitted for the last 10 to 15 years that there also has been Earth changes. Well, all of those, that's what I'm talking about. Every one of those, and it's up to people to, you know, they can decide for themselves which of those events was more traumatic than the other. I mean, it's kind of a futile, you know, but all together, taken all together, that caused so much trauma that that what we know as consciousness was basically fragmented, utterly, you know, short-circuited.
Yeah.
And it's, in fact, always a perpetual miracle to me that it existed. And I want to make this other point, and that is that because I understand how deep this fissure, this trauma, this schism, this deremption is, I am not one of, I'm not a person who, when I look around at the, what I can only describe as the state of decay, and I don't just believe it's a 20th century or 21st century state of decay, you know, we've been in a pretty bad state for quite a long time.
Yeah.
But when I look at all of that, I am not a person who finds that at all difficult to grasp. Didn't Artie Lang say that, insanity is a perfectly natural consequence of an insane environment? It's a going insane is actually a person's reaction to an insane or unhealthy environment.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm a person who looks at it like this, that knowing what man has gone through in a blink of an eye ago, having, conceived of that, of the magnitude of this, it is not surprising to me to see the kind of governments that we've got, the kind of psychotic psychosis that we have, the kind of paranoia, the kind of mask playing, which I described, a little bit more in the Future of Mankind talk.
Yeah.
All of that stuff that we went into, and of course, the self-sadism, which I hope we get time to talk about today again, and the rise of religion. When I look at all of this stuff that people complain about, and they fold their arms, and they shake their heads, and they roll their eyes, and go, my goodness, what is wrong with us? Things are just so terrible. Yes, but that's to be expected if you do what people like Jordan Maxwell have said, which is look to your past. Find out what has been going on in the past.
Yeah.
Not your life. You're born into a place, that has a history. There's roots. Your thinking, your consciousness, your ego is a thing. Find out what it is. And so from the past, we were traumatized. It's so immeasurably so, it's almost, you could write volumes on just that alone. And for people who are interested in that, certainly I can recommend you know, Julian Jaynes's book, The Origin of Consciousness and the Breakdown of the Bicameral Mind.
Mm.
But you see, so, you know, when I look at even what is happening within religion, when I see the atrocities that are happening criminally in the world, and when I see some of the abuses in religion, or when I look at war, or when I look at crime, and of course, you know, there's people who follow my work know that I also talk about other forms of, you know, psychic violence that mankind is not even really aware of is going on, but we'll have to leave that aside for another show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because again, yeah, we can take a Polaroid of a lot of the horrible forms of physical violence that are taking place, and I do hope that continues to happen, and that people still investigate all of that, and we try to understand why human beings would do all of these sadistic things.
Hmm.
But there's also another chapter, you know, about all other forms of another kind of violence that happens in the world. But when you take it all together, instead of being shocked and horrified, if you understood where we're coming from, then it's very easy to understand how these sadistic edifices, which grow in the name of God, and in the name of Jesus, and the name of love, and the name of light, are then suddenly go so rotten. So when we're talking about Inquisition, we're not just pointing the finger at some, you know, Christian Inquisition. We're pointing the finger at sadism itself.
Mm.
It doesn't matter if it's Christian sadism or Muslim sadism, you see, or, you know, the Tsar of Russia, you see, or Pol Pot, you know, or Pinochet, or, you know, what I mean, you know, whoever. It's sadism in man.
Yeah. The same reflection giving out.
Microcosm, macrocosm.
Mm.
You know, we talked in the Future of Mankind, talk about that. That what man is within, he creates the culture within that then manifests these demagogues. But then it's convenient, isn't it, for his ego to say, they're out there, poor little me can't do anything. Instead of realizing mankind creates the situation within their own psyche that then manifests later on as the growth physically of these individuals who are personifications of man's unrest.
Yeah.
And I don't know how long it's going to take for people to grasp this fact. You know, not that it hasn't been said many times. But, you know, when we're not picking on Christianity when we look at, but it just so happens that Christianity has operated in very much like the same way any cult operates. And certainly in a hierarchical way. What does that hierarchy do to people's souls? What's the consequence of living in a hierarchical way in which you're meant to just be a nothing?
Hmm.
You know, and lose your own sort of individuality. Is that healthy? Has that been leading to anything good?
Hmm. So, I mean, if we compare it to a cult, people can recognize maybe this in, you know, we can go to Marshall Applewhite's or whatever, you know, Heaven's Gate, and we can see it there. For people who are in the cult, that must be the most difficult to be able to see themselves from that perspective, to see themselves that they are in a cult, you know. What is necessary there? Deprogramming or going back to history, you think, to actually reference back this to see what the truth is of the matter or just the behavior of the cult itself, you know.
Well, cults, you know, what isn't a cult? You know, it's almost like, what isn't a cult?
Yeah.
Where can you be free from some cult? Isn't fashion a cult? You know, so it's not just the obvious cults that look kind of weird, you know, the Jim Jones type, weird cults, you know. But what isn't fashion a cult? You know, when you turn on the TV, you see these different fashions, and you see these. Look, we have conservative cult, we have the labor cult, you know, the democratic cult.
Yeah.
What? Tell me, what is not a cult? You know, the churches. How many factions have they got within a cult? And you're absolutely right. You know, George Herbert or somebody, Frank Herbert, the author said that the fish is the last creature to understand that it's in water. You know, the last creature to understand the mystery of water is the fish. So of course this is what happens. So my question is not ending the cults, or, you know, it's finding out, why would man want to be part of that? And again, a cult is defined by hierarchy. Thousands and thousands of people sitting cross-legged or whatever in front of some guru. What would make one man want to do that? Is it because man's psyche, as we've been saying, introducing this idea, is so fragmented, so traumatized, so utterly insecure, that it literally has to have a big daddy at the top of the totem pole shining his powerful light, his phallic light, his beam of light down onto everyone else to say, you are the herd, and you're going to just go crazy, and the bottomless pit will open unless you stay focused on me. I am the model. You lose your identity in me. This is happening all over the world. It's not just, in fact, it predates Christianity. It's just that Christianity is one of the easiest ways to see this operation taking place. And this loss of individuality into the major figure, into the big daddy, into the hologram, you know, and you see this beautifully portrayed in Star Trek V, the movie, where the protagonist, in this case Captain Kirk, refuses to lose his identity in, in the godlike character, even when he's standing in front of God. You know, I don't know about you, but I found when I watched that film, I found that I was almost like jumping up for joy in the theater. You know, they would have had a, I was very impressed with that.
Yeah.
That I've got a question for God. You know.
Yeah.
Yes, I want to see more of that.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not, you know, it's not that we're sitting here, you know, wanting to attack unnecessarily.
Sure.
But we have some very serious questions about, you know, what is really going on here and why man would want to do certain kinds of things, and if it is in fact linked to the trauma, I can understand why. That such an unnatural thing as hierarchy would replace holarchy. There is reasons for that, and we have to understand, because remember, like I said, if people are asking questions about how to build an alternative system, well, you got to know what the system you've got is already, and where its failures are.
That's right, yeah.
You know, and have the question,
yeah,
and the freedom to ask the question. And one of the most biggest problems is that I think that one of the biggest delusions is that we actually believe that Christianity, and people, as I'm saying this, can review it in their mind right now, we have an idea that as soon as you mention the word Christianity, or even religion, but certainly the word Christianity, that it's God-inspired. This is a delusion. God did not, let me just wake everybody up here, just in case they ever fell into this delusion, God did not create Christianity.
Yeah.
Okay, that might come as a big shock to somebody, but then those people need to wake up. Christianity, like all religion, is man-made.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Vatican City is man-made.
Yeah.
Bible is man-made. You know, most of the stories about Jesus are man-made. Let's just face it.
Yeah.
God is not what we're critiquing here, nor am I, when I talk about these things and get into detail, invading the private space of a person's private worship.
Sure.
What that person does in their own life, how they've read these books, how they've understood these things, and their emotional, subjective understanding of religion is completely their own business. I'm talking about the institutions that have manifested themselves like a plague on this earth. And I do believe they are a cult. I do believe that they are extremely dangerous. And it's ludicrous and hypocritical for a person like me to say, well, I've got answers to fixing things, you know, or, you know, I got some suggestions about what can be done, without addressing that serious problem. Because I know that those things grew out of the trauma of the past, and in some way they were kind of necessary. But as the ego strengthens itself, and as selfhood, we come back to even some sort of center, we will need to dispense with these things. But the problem is, as I've discovered, and, you know, which is very much in my message, is that there's also forces out there that know that man is striving to grow and become centered again.
Yeah.
And they are deeply threatened by that force. They know there's an Aquarian age coming on.
Yeah.
They know there's a fifth dimensional transcendence perhaps going to take place. They know that man is straining into his chains. But what does that mean for them and their cults? Well, it's obvious. It's like any corporation. They're going to lose readers, you know, so to speak. You know, they're going to turn around and there's, you know, some chairs are empty.
Yeah.
Because that is deadly. So, of course, what do? They come back in and try to shake up the problem, create more trauma to simulate the trauma. So this was done in the 1500s under Gregory the VII. It's been done by several popes. It's been done by several politicians. It's being done today. It's an old formula in which you re-traumatize people in order to get them to fall into line, into groupthink, and into lockstep. You see, and what we're seeing now is, as I always term it, a war on consciousness. What you're seeing in the outer permutations of it, as horrific as it is, and we need to address those horrors, is ultimately a war on consciousness. But I'm also just very interested, you know, in why there has been so much cruelty. Why today we're still getting reports that, you know, in the Gulf, soldiers have been found, you know, Jeff Rentz carried an article, it's right on his website there, about soldiers, American soldiers, you know, urinating on the corpses of the people, civilians that they've killed.
Mm, yeah.
You know, it goes back to that old atrocities that everyone know were done in Vietnam.
Yeah.
As I'm saying something like that, people are balked in horror. Well, wait a minute, pull back a minute. As horrific as that is for individual soldiers to do that kind of thing, isn't there a war going on in which millions are being killed?
Mm.
You know, hundreds of people, thousands of people are being killed.
Yeah.
So see, what seems atrocious to us on the small scale of a rape, a murder, a terrible violation like that of human dignity, seems almost, you know, commendable and meaningless on the large scale. This is what I'm concerned about.
Yeah.
What's wrong with the human nature?
Yeah, it's okay if it's within these parameters, the violence, you know, like the as soon as, you know, you hear complaints sometimes, you know, shooting at ambulances or whatever, you know, or even hospitals being bombed or whatever. But as you say, what the heck, there's a war going on. I mean, there's rules and laws, but this is kind of the insanity of it all, that we're trying to justify that, okay, we can kill people, but within these parameters, then it's okay or whatever. Very strange.
And Christianity is one of these, you know, religions which is intolerant in this way. You know, we look at the play on words alone. Inquisition. Inquisition is based on the word inquiry. Well, there's nothing of an inquiry going on with Inquisition. What was going on there was interrogation.
Mm.
What was going on there was torture. Now, forgive me if I'm wrong, but there's a difference between an inquiry into something and an interrogation into something and mass murder into something.
Mm.
So already we've got problems, you know. But the thing that comes to mind, having said that, you know, there's even the definition in the encyclopedia where it says that on July 21st, 1542, Pope Paul III, with the Constitution, established the Supreme Sacred Congregation of the Roman and Universal Inquisition. All right, so it began in 1542 under Pope Paul III. Staffed by cardinals and other officials whose task it was to, quote, and this is the quote, to maintain and defend the integrity of the faith and to examine and prescribe errors and false doctrines. So the reason for the Inquisition was to maintain and defend the integrity of the faith and to examine. The examine doesn't mean torture people and kill them. It just means to examine and prescribe errors and false doctrines. Look how lovely that, you know, it's just exactly like the Patriot Act today.
Yeah.
It's lovely language. We're going to protect you.
Yeah, sure.
We're going to, it's all for your own good. There's enemies in our midst. We're just going to, you know, find out who they are and bring them to justice.
Yeah.
But how does it work in real life when you've got sadistic people torn up inside, mentally toxic, who now have total carte blanche to go and do what they want under the name of this? But just from a few purely semantic, philosophical point of view, why on earth would the church want to be defending the integrity of anything? You see how defense becomes attack? You see how the philosophy of defense builds a wall in which you've already now, you, as soon as you want to defend something, you've created an enemy.
Yeah, that's right.
And first of all, if your faith is any good, if your faith is really thou shalt not kill, and based in any type of virtue, which of course the Bible does contain, and which great Christians, many of them are my mentors, and the list is very long, of the people that I consider mentors who are Christian. Of course, if it's based on any of that true good Christianity, then you have no enemy.
That's right.
Because you have nothing to defend. Your thing is so strong, right? There's no point defending anything. So I'm already curious as to why an Inquisition would have been created that's already so intolerant. But again, it goes back to the idea that everybody has to be coming into the center. There can't, it's like the spectrum. Well, we can't have any ultraviolet, we can't have any, you know, infrared. Can everybody just constellate in the center?
Sure, yeah.
Because your God is getting really traumatized by all this diversity. You know, we've got to have all of you, congealed and clustered into the middle. And we're not going to tolerate any type of dissent. Here we are in 2001, where even Muslims, and I don't know if anybody realizes this, it should be patently obvious to a four-year-old child that Islamic religion is the biggest religion in the world. Please tell me how Islamic now can be the new pariah, the new nemesis, the new outsider. How, what kind of illogicism could possibly existing in our day and age that is actually making Islam, an Arabic Islamic people, an outsider religion? How psychopathic can you get? How congealed, you see?
Yeah.
And clustered could some fanatical people, naming no names, could want to get you, you know, so homogenized that even the most generic people are now considered outsiders. Who was it who said, you know, that it's okay, you can be free to write about anything as long as it's not about government? You know, it's just phenomenal to me.
Yeah, that's right. As long as, yeah, exactly, I got the quote right here. As long as I don't write about the government, religion, politics, and other institutions, I'm free to print anything.
Sorry. Right, yeah, exactly. You're free to print anything as long as it's not about religion, government, institutions, or what. And that's the freedom that people are saying, okay, I'll accept that.
Yeah.
You know, Howard Zinn said it wonderfully. He said that civil disobedience is not our problem. Our problem is civil obedience.
There you go.
Your problem is not having rebels. We don't have enough rebels. You have wall-to-wall conformity is what you have. And then, of course, as I spoke in the Future of Mankind DVD, you have fake rebellion.
Of course, yeah.
You know, it's not like what Quadrophenia is showing. It's not what you can find in the true expressions of, you know, of true rebellion, which is a personal transformation that is nothing to do with the collective.
Sure.
The mods, the rockers, you know, the freaks, the fashions, the goths, you know, whatever you see on TV. You know, Melrose Place, whatever kind of cultism you've got. What is a cult? Study it, you know. So, civil obedience. Remember we talked about in the, in the Future of Mankind thing, where the whole idea of any kind of modern government, modern political figure, demagogue, is the same thing that we see in the Bible with that the chosen people are made chosen because what virtue do they possess? They possess one virtue, which is obedience. So the slave-master relationship is based on that dynamic. The slave conforms and becomes obedient because he's been programmed down through time to believe that you only have one choice, and that is obey or die. You know, it's like they said, march or die. If you believe that it's obey or die, then you obey.
Yeah.
And it's very easy for a person who's been repeatedly traumatized, who's been repeatedly disconnected, who's feeling so futile, who's terribly self-sadistic, and maybe, you know, this is, again, a big key, the self-sadism, you know, because I actually believe, you see, as I've said it, I don't know how many times in my writings, that the people at the helm of government are put there by us, but these people are basically possessed. They're not really human beings at all. They're sort of beings who have become, you can look at it in two ways. Let's look at it in two ways. By their own definition, they're possessed. Right? So speaking from a religious context, I totally believe that the people in power and tops of religion and government, royal families, the whole, all of these people are literally possessed by, you know, power hunger, envy, greed, all of these things.
Sure.
And that they're basically disciples of a sorcery.
Yeah.
And they operate against the real magic of life. But another way to look at it is that these people are, another way to look at it, and also you can understand it even, again, in the Christian context. There are people, if you don't want to say they're possessed, then let's just say that they have absorbed, have been absorbed by the core. Meaning they've lost self into the God at the top. Okay, so basically it's the same thing, but you can just look at it in two ways. Either the person has become possessed by some daemon, and therefore they're operating according to that archetype that's possessed them, or they've lost their identity into them, into this other place.
Do you mean that could be a process that actually is taking place when they are put in a in such a position of a top leadership or whatever within politics or like a queen or whatever, that actually the more people that are actually looking at them or projecting at them or whatever,
That's different.
They lose themselves.
No, that's different. They've already lost themselves before that. Because remember, it's only a man who's lost who would want the attention of millions of people sitting cross-legged like sheep in front of him. I've got big questions about anyone who would tolerate that. Same thing goes on in a personal domestic relationship. I've got severe, serious problems with people who, under the name of love, have people who are slaves, dependency. People who are dependent on others, or more correctly, people who like to make others dependent upon them. Again, that's another show. We got to leave that aside. But if taking it again to this macro level, I have severe problems about anyone who would want to be, you know, Charles Baudelaire, one of my favorite poets, the French poet, said, if a man has merit, what's the use of decorating him?
That's right.
So I've got severe problems why you'd want to get down on your bony little knees and accept any kind of an award from anyone, from the state, from peers, from the Queen of England. Why are you to accept an award from some of these creatures is to endorse their existence.
Mm. Yeah.
They should be wiped off the face of the earth. What are you doing accepting awards from them?
Hmm.
Don't they have to be in that position for you to give you an award?
Mm. Yeah.
And if you take it, aren't you endorsing, oh, you're above me.
Mm. Yeah. Indeed.
You see, wonderful. I've matriculated. But this is poured into people from the time of school.
Mm.
You're going to get a star. You're going to be the top of the class. You're going to be a prefect. You're going to get a degree. You're going to graduate. Then you're going to go on and become the head boy. You're going to be the chief executive, the CEO. Look at how these words have commanded people. You're the big noise. You've made millions of dollars. Everyone loves you. Then it turns out they find out you've been a pedophile, or you know, the whole story comes out that you're a drug abuser. You know, how many of these scenarios do people need before they realize that you don't need to decorate those who've already got inner integrity and truth? They don't need your psychophantasm. They don't need your acknowledgement.
Yeah.
They're creative. They're motivated from within. They're not requiring anyone or anything else to give them awards for who they are.
Hmm.
Yet we're filled with people hungry for that. We're filled, the world is full of desperate people that if they're not going to get acknowledgement, you see, from someone.
Hmm.
And I see this in athletes, I see this in all sorts of people. I didn't see it in Bruce Lee.
Hmm.
So that meaning there are different, you ain't waiting for somebody to hand out the decorations, you know what I mean? I didn't see it in Ayn Rand. But you do see it in the masses of people who are just so desperate for that approval and become neurotic if they don't get it.
Mm.
Well, this is what we're talking about in religion.
Hmm.
This is the slave-master relationship. But what my main message is, and if people can only come away with one thing, it's not just a problem of the master doing anything to you. It's not just about George Bush imposing something on you. It's not just about the Illuminati waving their magic wands and enslaving you. Like so many people who try to, focus that there are secret societies, and there are, of course.
Of course.
But we have to take a little bit, for a little few more steps forward and realize something quite incredible. And that is that the slave is complicit in his own enslavement.
Mm. Yeah, I agree totally, yeah. Very interesting.
Martial artists will understand what I'm talking about. People who've studied Aikido will know what I'm talking about. People who've read the last chapter in the Atlantis book will know what I'm talking about. People who've done any type of thinking really deeply will realize this. It's not a new story. It's not my story. This has been taught by the greatest mystics of all.
Hmm.
That it takes two people to have a slave-master relationship.
That's
you
right.
must want to fall into slavery. My mind goes back to an incredible scene in the movie 3 Days of the Condor, where the protagonist, in this case, is Robert Redford. He's basically abducted the woman. He's desperate for to be, he's being chased.
Mm-hmm.
So of course he wants to escape, and in panic he's abducted this woman, and then he basically ties her up.
Mm-hmm.
And in the it's a fantastic dynamic in which, even when she's kind of a little bit concerned about her safety, but then she kind of realizes that he is not so much the devil, he's okay, he's cool. But she doesn't ask him to untie her. And there's an incredible moment in the movie where the Faye Dunaway character sitting there still in bondage, and the character of Robert Redford, who's the CIA, guy who's run away, he is saying to her, why have you not asked me to untie you?
Hmm.
So that to me always leaped out, you see that image? There we go, there's the slave mentality. Who wants in some way the sadomasochist? They're in bondage, because again, that bondage. What is another meaning of the word bondage? We look at it kind of negatively.
Mm.
Bondage means you're safe, you're secure, your orders are going to be given to you.
Hmm.
You don't have to have any free will. Whoa, look at the relief.
Mm.
Right. Look at the relief.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting.
Teacher will tell me what to do. Right.
Yeah.
Priest has laid down the law.
Yeah.
Martin Luther has told me what I should do.
Sure.
The Pope is telling you, look, I read it, it's in Vatican II. He's telling me what I should believe.
Of course, it's also guidelines to life, basically, in a way. And that is very comforting, I think.
Well, it's actually guidelines to death. It's necrotic. It's not life at all. It's the anti-life. It's necrotic thinking that brings that on. Because that kind of person has actually stopped living. He's no longer vital at all. He's now looking for the state. Remember I told you, if you're jelly within, and I'm understanding why that jelliness exists, that the ego, you know, like the rotten tooth, it's shaking there because the foundation's incredibly weak. Mm. You know, my mind goes to the 16th card of the tarot. That shows the whole predicament right there. The ego has been shattered into a million parts.
Yeah.
It's very insecure. I understand that. But out of that insecurity, we then think necrotically. And that feeling of bondage, that feeling of coming into the center, having no spectrum, no gray areas, is the inevitable desire of the slave as well as the master. Mm. But the slave has had a contract to only blame the master.
Mm.
You know, in the devil card of the tarot, you see the mystery again, in which the two parties, male and female, who are standing in front of the beast, and this is a Capricornian card that does represent the state or any kind of edifice that imposes laws upon you. Without getting into all the tarot symbolism, but that card represents state, order, karma, you know, oppression.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but if you look very closely at the two figures, the chains are loosely hanging around their necks. They can remove them at any time.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, very interesting.
Yeah.
And I would say this to the whole, you know, all of our listeners, and that is that the chain is also hanging very loosely around your neck. Mm. You can remove it at any time.
Yeah.
And even should there be restrictions in society, as there was in the communist era, as there may be again in our society, I'm not looking to that, but you know, it could happen.
Indeed, yeah.
But even if it does happen, then it's attitudinal freedom. Of course it can happen. Mikhail Bakunin, the founder of anarchism, was chained to a wall for 18 years in Tsarist dungeons, but he was the freest man who walked the earth.
Hmm.
Why? Because he was free up here in his brain.
Hmm.
He was free in his mind, his attitude. It's attitudinal freedom, you know, that is the most important thing. Because as a matter of fact, if you really study the world, you'll find that there has been tremendous autocratic control. There's a lot of psychic control going on. I completely acknowledge the fact that we're prisoners, and very much the same way that, you know, Patrick McGowan's Prisoner movie shows you. But you have the illusion that you're free.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But see, even the free man wants to enslave himself. Nobody's forcing anyone to run to these gurus and these religions and these paths and these techniques. We are doing it of our own order. I get 100 emails a day saying, Michael, what should I do? Give me some answers. Tell me what I should do about this problem. I don't know how many times I've had to repeat. You know what is best for you to do.
Yeah.
What, stop asking me or anyone else. For you. My message, have you not heard it? You know, open that third ear. And listen very carefully, because you know what is best for you, and any thought in your mind that says alternative is the voice that you need to remove now. You need to remove that voice right now. That is your enemy.
Mm.
The enemy is that you don't have complete and utter control and complete mastery over your life, that you don't know what you're doing. And I would go so far to say something more. It was actually better said by others, but I'll try to say it in my own way, which is that if in fact you do turn to somebody else for your psychological advice, I don't mean just normal advice about, you know, how to start the car and, hey, how do you, can you help me with my computer, you know.
Sure.
That's just topical, daily, mercurial stuff. But when you give away your psychological power and you stop asking your intuition, your own inner voice, this incredible voice that's been given to you, that if people thought about it for a moment, they'd be amazed at the miracle of having an inner voice, an inner intelligence. The moment that you cease to turn to that, you are violating the Holy Spirit, which is your higher self. You're slapping that force in the face every time that you don't cleave to your power.
Hmm.
And more than that, well, not more than that, that's about as extreme as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the other consequences of giving your power away in that way is that you then become responsible for the demagogic, tyrannical, Orwellian systems that grow in the world.
Mm.
Those edifices could not exist tribally, they cannot exist socially, and they cannot exist globally unless man is himself turning off the switches of his own empowerment.
Hmm.
And he's doing that in multiple ways in this world.
Mm. Oh, that's very true. I think to actually realize that is more... I mean, what about the economic bondage then, in a way? People are always going to find something, you know, that they're afraid of. They're going to seek some external thing, slavery of the work, for example. I mean, that's another thing that comes up again and again. Right. You know, you can't just quit your job, you know, or you know, you gotta have the money, and of course that's true in a way, but how far can we extend that?
Well, what they mean by that is that you can't quit your slavery. You know, I don't get into too much of the, you know, the individual details of it. The way I look at it is that, look, all of these things are based on a form of mind control, in which that if you leave the state, if you leave the village, right?
Yeah.
Which is so many interpretations. If you cross yourself off, right, the cross man, right? If you desire to leave, if you desire to rebel, if you desire to be an outsider, you will suffer, you'll die. You know, and I can't say there isn't going to be suffering. In fact, there is a lot of suffering. But there's two kinds of suffering. It's like we talked before in that show on The Outsider. Yes, there's suffering on both roads. There's suffering to be in the system as a conformist, regimented orc. Lost, your soul is now being repressed. You know, you suffer because your soul isn't with you. And your inner voice is stifled.
Sure.
But you also suffer on the road of the outsider as well. From alienation, of bleeding for others. The very title of our previous show was The Man Who Bleeds. So you're suffering intensely. So there's suffering on both sides. But the difference with the suffering of the outsider is, at least he's himself. He owns his suffering. He owns his own emotions. Now, of course, once you have now bought into the system of slavery, there are many threads in the net. Right? There's economic slavery, there's all, you know, domestic slavery, which is, I think, the worst kind.
And you're always going to find the one that, you know, or you're always going to find one, rather,
right.
I guess, you know,
if
you need it.
Like Frank Herbert, again, you know, the author of Dune, he said that, you know, a web is not made with one thread. You know, a puppet isn't moved with one string. But a lot of people have their intelligence in the brains now, and have had for many years to be investigating this whole question of prosperity, this whole question of, you know, how do I disconnect? Or maybe even if I don't disconnect from the system, you know, because again, I don't believe there's anything wrong with the world that we're living in. That world could be a beautiful world if we just made some corrections. We don't have to get off the grid necessarily and run to Timbuktu and reinvent the wheel.
Yeah.
We've already invented it. But it's just corrupt. Because there's no shamanic filter to get rid of the toxic people who are now in but don't get me wrong, the people who are at the helm of the world organization, structure, governmental, societal ship are not the creators of that ship. The creators of society's great things are geniuses. Right? These are the fine, you know, the brains, the scientific and artistic and musical geniuses are the ones who create, then we use it.
Sure.
In the very Nietzsche, the way Nietzsche exposed. Then it's taken over by, you know, the middleman sort of thing. So, you don't... Look at the genius of, you know, making the big ships that go on the high seas, you know, or the planes that fly in the air. There's nothing wrong with any of that.
No.
It's just that, you know, man has become... he's lost a direction. He's lost... He's become a very apathetic. And this web is... The forms of slavery are manifold. The religions of the world, you know, are themselves greedy. They're not into religion; they're into land and power and money. They're thinking of people as servants.
Another form of an expression of their own insecurity. That, you know, we all can go back to that the sense of fear that, you know, the universe will not provide for you, or you're not going to make it if you don't. You know, go out there and grab it all or whatever. But what a you know, hypocritical thought in a way that you know, you should be able to trust that God provides for you. Then, you know, if you're within that structure of you know, Christianity, then, for example, but the church has been the biggest, you know, gold herder of them all.
Yes,
of course
it has. And then it tells you to read the Lord's Prayer. If you're really, really reading the Lord's Prayer, then you can't have anything to do with the Christian religion as an institution. You just can't. Because what does it say? It says, give us this day our daily bread.
Yeah.
Okay, let me repeat that slowly. Give us this day our daily bread. It says this day, not this week, not this month, not this lifetime. So what the Lord's Prayer is telling you is that if you truly and utterly have a bowl that is empty, and you come to the universal order for this day's bread, the universe will always supply it. But as soon as you say, well, I got two bowls, I need a little extra, then you're in violation of the universal economy.
Yeah.
And the universal matrix, the universal presence, steps back and goes, sorry, you're in breach. You're greedy, you want too much. Give us this day. The person whose mentality is non-acquisitive is always provided for. You don't have too many of those people around, but let's just imagine that there are some. This is a being who comes with an open bowl every morning. He's not in excess. I want people to really meditate on that word excess in all of its permutations. If you're in excess, then you're in violation of the natural order. So why should that natural order ever fill your bowl or give you more? So then, of course, you'll turn to what? You'll turn to the enslavement of human beings. I don't care if it's under the name of statistics or economy or military or social. You are in now in the chain. You're now in the flow of lack. You're impoverished. You're coming from lack. And therefore, you now need to subjugate, you see, and have more and hoard more. Which, of course, as you say, the church has been doing, but the royal families have been doing. Every man is doing it. Every man, woman, and child is doing it. Look at the excess of stuff.
That's right.
Simplicity is meaningless. Some Native American Indian said, you know, he said, I was amazed when I watched human beings in the West stuff themselves with food until their stomachs are so overcrowded. Wait till they're starving and then eat to capacity till they're almost, they can't move.
Yeah.
You know, well, this is the glut of the affluenza, which is, you know, coming from the, which is rampant in the world. The idea being is that if you really were meditating on the meaning of this, you would never approach the universe in excessiveness, because you realize you're only living and breathing right now. Now, there's a strange prosperity law hidden in the middle of that Lord's Prayer, which says that if you truly do have the absolute faith, then you will never go without. But you have to manifest that in your own life and really believe it. And I also endorse, you know, some of the other prosperity messages also. One of them being that, you know, nobody has your money bags in your hand except yourself. You know, and all of that. But, you know, just going back to the question of religion, the incredible double standards, you know, we will laugh at some African Oriental millennial cult that's just committed mass suicide, you know, or, you know, the Solar Temple or Jim Jones. We'll all, sort of when that comes on the headlines, you know, we'll just have a good laugh and almost be awestruck. And we don't realize that we're in a cult wall to wall that has millions and millions of deaths. You know, half a dozen people kill themselves, some cockeyed, you know, crazy cult. What about the Hundred Years' War? What about, you know, the 30 Years' War? What about the incredible, up to recent times, slaughters and massacres, you know? I mean, you know, the Jesuits, when we've done shows on the Jesuits, you know, what kind of crimes can we lay at their door? Of the horrors that these people have perpetrated. You know, there's an interesting quote by a guy called Kersey Graves. Kersey Graves is one of my biggest influences. You know, on my astrotheology pages, I have an important section. People go to the Taroscopes website, they can get involved with the teachings of this incredible man. And he wrote in his Bible of Bibles, he said that the Quaker Church, of which this author was once a member, have a clause in their discipline forbidding their members to read pernicious books. Such books and publications as contain language which appears to sanction crime or wrong practices, or which teach bad morals. Then he goes on to say, the Christian Bible may be ranked, you know, with works of this character, according to Graves. And he's absolutely right. How that, you know, I mean, the amount of vile things, you know, that is in the Bible. And there's your contradiction, that you Quakers are saying we ban all pernicious books, but they adore the Bible.
Sure.
Now, I've got problems with why somebody would want to make the center of their religion the Bible. He says it's always confounded me, and anyone who's sane enough to read what it's really saying there, by and written by a very instructed author like Kersey Graves, you know, will have to agree.
What about the idea that, you know, because that keeps coming up, you know, that the work that you know, the writers of the Bible, that what they received were, you know, the inspired Word of God, and since that time, no one else can have, you know, being inspired by God, it seems like, but it seems like a very, you know, again, a very, as you say, it again confirms the hierarchy idea that you talked about earlier, that, you know, you get this from somewhere up high, and then you know, put it down in the Bible, and we even know, you know, that books have been taken out of the Bible for, you know, various reasons and stuff like that, but now we have this book, and how can you penetrate and a psyche that has that idea that, okay, this has been handed down from God, you know, himself through other people, and here it is, follow it, or, you know, how can you get through to someone like that? I mean, it's impossible.
You see, this is this whole cultism again, this whole sectarianism again. We've got the answer.
Mm.
Not only that, but this answer was provided by God. Then since God must be perfect, this is a completely perfect system that doesn't need to evolve.
Yeah, sure.
The idea there is to shut off any development. You're a man. You don't need to be developing it.
Yeah.
God has already manifested it. And if he's manifested it complete.
Mm.
So what we've got here is a complete system. Do you know how absolutely refreshing that is to most people, to get them off the hook of doing any real study or any kind of real, as I said, it's an assault on consciousness. They don't want you to be a rational animal.
Yeah.
You know, one of my greatest heroes is Ayn Rand, and she said that man is free to choose not to be conscious.
Hmm.
An incredible statement, because she's admitting you have choice.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, we got that far. Great. Man is free to choose not to be conscious, but not free to escape the penalty of unconsciousness, which is destruction.
Hmm.
So she's saying, by all means, choose unconsciousness, but then with it will come a heavy price, which is destructiveness.
Right. Yeah.
So that's exactly what is happening here. That when you buy into these homogenized, packaged things, it's turning off your, you don't need to develop, so you become arrested.
Mm.
Well, any garden that works like that, any system that doesn't grow, that doesn't develop, this will eventually decay. Because, of course, we know that nature has to have change, has to have constant refreshing, and it has a catabolic action. There is no catabolic action in religion. There's only fixity. There's only conformity. There's only regimentation. There's only clustering. There's only a pathological fixity.
Hmm.
But as I was saying, wouldn't that be the perfect glue to hold together a fractured consciousness?
Hmm.
A fractured mind?
Hmm.
Obedience? Don't balk the system? Don't ask any questions, or you're of the devil?
Hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, Edmund Burke, a man who himself was always on the run, you know, from authority, the great Irish scholar, he said that people never give up their liberties but under some delusion.
Hmm.
And that delusion is no different than it was in the 1500s or the 13th century, you see, or from the, you know, or than it is now. And we need to really realize our level of our delusion. Around about the time of the Inquisitions, around about the time of the Dark Ages, not only was man doing the most unhealthy things to other men, but then didn't the plague break out?
Hmm.
Didn't you have also nature, you know, didn't you have a physical component of pestilence and disease?
That's right.
Look what's happening. Look at what's happening today. Ever heard of bird flu? Or, you know, not that it exists, but I'm just saying that, do you see the comparisons? That we are fixated about what? Bodily unhealth. There's the gremlins, the bugs, AIDS, oh my goodness, HIV, whatever, you know, bird flu, you know, the flu, other pathogens. At the same time as we are the most repressive, right? These cultish types of evangelical, you know, which I don't, evangelism is not Christianity. You see? Any more than Zionism is Judaism.
Hmm.
We're talking about different things here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, isn't it incredible that there's again parallels? That we're obsessed today by disease and ill health.
Mm.
At the same time as we've also become conformist in our religions. It's a strange parallel to me. And there was a Gregory in right, it was a letter to Saint Jerome, actually, from a guy called Gregory of Nazianzus. Gregory of Nazianzus, writing to Saint Jerome, said that a little jargon is all that is necessary to impose upon the people. The less they comprehend, the more they admire.
Hmm.
So the founding fathers of Christianity were literally admitting it, that don't feed these people with knowledge. Get them out of their reason.
Hmm.
And that is why you see, even there's an incredible quote from a man called Johann Lorenz von Mosheim, a very important writer from the 17th century. He was a church historian from Germany, Johann Lorenz von Mosheim. And he said that by far the greatest part of those who embraced the Christian religion in its infancy were men of mean extraction and wholly illiterate. It could not otherwise happen but that a great scarcity should be experienced in the churches of persons possessing the qualifications requisite for initiating the ignorant and communicating instruction to them with a due degree of readiness and skill. Basically, what he's saying is, in the beginning, it was mostly ignoramuses, people of great, very illiterate, that were the rank and file of the first Christian movement, the mass movement.
That's interesting, because one thing I came to mind earlier was, the need to actually go into some of these organizations and to, take a look at the people inside there and whatever, because if these have been, power institutions in the past, this would, of course and obviously, attract people who are, obsessed with power, to have power, pathologic, psyche or whatever, people that have psychological problems also, so it's necessary to actually look at it and try to see if, that should occur, I guess, within the organization itself in a way, it's a big organization, of course,
right.
The church, it's so obscure when you say that, but I mean, that to actually look into it themselves and see, okay, what are the people here, are they just, another politician or whatever, but again, the need for power, or people who are power hungry, will always search for, either if it's politics or religion or whatever, what have you. So,
well, look at the Inquisition again. Why would men who are claiming to be of God and of love, form themselves into an organization to go around and, not only, as I said, it's ludicrous in one way to even want to defend anything that you're about. Whatever gives a person, I'm already worried right there. But then it goes much further than that. They actually do go and physically start torturing and butchering people and burning people at the stake and all of this kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't see any difference in what's happening today, but that's just me. But see, that happens, as I said. Remember, I was talking about the leaders who either they're possessed. You can look at it as a form of possession, or you can look at it as that they have no self, because they've dissolved their own self into that greater non-self of the God at the top. You're meant to absorb into that being. You're meant to project, onto God. And I'm also indicting Eastern religions as well. It's not just Christianity.
Sure.
So the person who has now no self, I mean, it's a no-brainer, isn't it? That if you have no sense of your own value and no sense of your own self, how are you going to sympathize or empathize with another person? So the torturer is a selfless person. In exactly the same way that Ayn Rand and people who have been trying to put this message out have described. It's a person who is selfless. It's a puppet. A person will do all sorts of atrocities because you have eviscerated his sense of self. He's basically desensitized in a way. I also have referred to it in my work as murdering the self. People are walking around you. Can you believe this? It's an actual crime that has never been on the books. People have murdered their own emotions, murdered themselves, murdered their own selves, but they're walking. And just because people don't have the eyes to see that doesn't mean it's not a phenomenon. Believe me, it is a phenomenon. And one day the world's going to wake up to this and have a biggest shock that they could ever want to imagine. That there's just people walking. I mean, it's something like out of They Live, only there's no glasses to see this. At least in They Live, you find some glasses. In this one, we're still waiting for the glasses. But the fact of the matter is, when you're going to see this one, you're really going to be in for a shock. That there's people out there walking and talking and, drinking wine and driving their cars, and they're dead. I know that sounds like a radical fact, but death is not something that just the person is lying completely inert. There is a phenomenon of the living dead, meaning emotionally and psychically dead. It's a fact. It's a phenomenon. It's known to psychologists. So, and this self-hate is the precursor to that, of course. And then the fulfillment of that sadistic urge to murder yourself, then you will create those guards at Abu Ghraib. Then you will create those soldiers who want to urinate on the, on the corpses of the people that they've murdered. Then you will create the generals who will bask in mass murder and come up with all sorts of weaponry, to destroy people. Then you will have all of the inquisitioners. Then you will have the Gonzaleses and the Chertovs.
Chertovs, yeah.
These death, sorcerers of death. But let's not just point to those people and go, there they are. they may be, you know, in a position of autocracy and dominance, but who is the slave, and why does the slave allow himself to be a slave? The slavery is in your mind. Slavery is in your mind.
Yeah.
These people themselves are slaves. The Pope is a slave. Can you understand that? I mean, can we get around this concept that anyone who is in a position of a hierarchy like that is a slave to that which is above it? They may write all the beautiful poetry. They may, you know, they may dress in robes of silk, and they may surround themselves like dragons with millions and millions and millions of dollars and with adoring legions of fans, but those people are empty.
Yeah.
Because the man who is strong, the true emperor, requires nothing, and least of all the submission of any human being. And there have been such people walking the earth. In fact, their motive is quite the opposite. It's to waken those people up. It's to stand back when those people try to lean on you and let them fall. Because I'd rather have a person fall and perish than I'd have them become dependent. And when we finally have the strength to allow that, we're back to a shamanic paradigm in which we're going to be so vigilant and so vigilant of our self-sovereignty. And have such psychic immunity and such strength that we will not permit people to become dependent in any shape or form in any way. Well, we have a culture today where people are thinking of nothing else but making others dependent upon them. From the parents onwards. We know about the men who say they'll murder their wives if those wives ever leave. That's an extreme example, isn't it? You think that's the only example? Children are dominated. There's not even a personality left. Necrotic thinking. And this self-hate, once you've abandoned this, once you've been cajoled, manipulated, even from a virtuous point of view, but for whatever it might be, when you have lost your selfhood, then you are not a self. And I don't care under what kind of, you know, sweet trappings loss of self is you know, presented under. The man who has lost his self is desensitized on a fundamental human level, and therefore the suffering of another has no meaning.
That's right.
And this is immediately then what becomes, you know, of course that person's going to say, well, I was just following orders, but I don't want to get any, you know, the particulars need to be studied individually, of course. But in general, what we're talking about here is the loss of selfhood, which is already was traumatized from past traumas.
Yeah.
And is still highly, you know, and again, if there's going to be a true decline, I'm not saying there is or there isn't, but if in fact we do end up suffering in the next 7 years, you know, in the countdown to 2012, if there is in fact radical negative changes, it is going to be because of this. It's not going to be because of chemtrails. It's not going to be because of, you know,
External
things.
Force, war, in that way.
No.
Yeah.